White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 522.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown,
Auburn! Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I am in the cusp between two snow days. We had a snow day today and we're already been told we're having a snow day tomorrow. So I feel like I'm just not working hard enough these days. I feel like we're just between the pandemic and the snowpocalypse. I'm just spending a lot of time in my basement these days. How are you, sir?
It's almost like someone paid you a bunch of money not to work.
Well, I don't know about a bunch of money, but I am being paid currently. That's true.
I'm doing okay. We had our own snowstorm over the weekend, and then power is off and on a little bit, but we're doing okay.
Yeah, I just actually filmed a video. I posted it on Facebook. I think I'm going to post it on Twitter in just a minute. I see that Alan J. Porter, our co-host on the Bond shows and White Rocket, he's in Texas, and he's covered up with snow, a picture he posted. So it is just crazy. I mean, we don't get this kind of thing. I've been here about 15 years, and I'm finding that it seems to be about once every 5 or 6 years that we get something this heavy here. But we were looking out the back patio, and there was a big watering bucket can, you know, for the plants, whatever. Big watering thing, like a foot tall. And earlier today, it was lightly dusted with snow. And then around noon, it was like half submerged. And a little while ago, I looked out there, and you can't even see it anymore. It's just a flat, blank landscape. It's gone. Mm. And when you open our front door, there's like 8 inches of snow just standing there in a wall at the bottom of the door. And that's up that's up like a foot from the ground, you know. So it's crazy. It's really crazy. Well, we got a few things to talk about tonight, I suppose. There have been some Auburn-adjacent things to happen that we're going to talk about. And there's been some I guess a few Auburn things, basketball, but we've also got a new feature that Jared put together for us that should be a lot of fun. So we got a nice little packed show coming up. Where do you want to start?
We got to start with the news of the day, which is that former Auburn coach Gus Malzahn is now at the head coach at the University of Central Florida. Van, how do you feel about that?
Hey, we got to get better at celebrating.
He's celebrating, I'm sure, because he's rolling in Auburn cash, and now he's going to get paid. I didn't see how much the contract is, but I'm assuming it's not as much as we were paying him. But he's going to be in a conference he can win some games in, and I have a lot of thoughts about it. I did notice just now that Central Florida posted, like, positive spin graphic number 101, where it said, like, you know, 8 straight years of bowl games, and I'm like, but how many did he win, you know? And it's, you know, it's 2013 national championship game. Well, but we lost. You know, there's just so many caveats. I said this on Twitter. I love Gus to death. I'm thrilled that he got this job. But it's just kind of funny. Right after the Auburn family sort of came to peace with it. We got our new coach, and we're pretty happy about that and everything. We kind of came, you know, found some peace with Gus. And now we've got Central Florida doing that pro-Gus spin that we were batting back and forth for the last, like, 5 years. You know, it's like we were done with the pro-Gus, anti-Gus spin fight, you know. That's all it's been for the last 5 years is, well, Gus has been to 8 bowl games. Yeah, but we lost almost all of them. Well, but, you know, he's had us in all these New Year's Day bowl games. We keep losing. Well, but, you know, he recruits great. Yeah, but we lose all the players. It's just been that back and forth and back and forth. You know what I mean? And it's like, here comes Central Florida, like, jumping on the – they have to. I mean, of course they do. They just hired him. They're going to put the best spin on him that they can. But it's just kind of funny. But yeah, I wish I wasn't so mad at Central Florida for the attitude that they showed when we played them in the Sugar Bowl and afterward, because they really did kind of do a Florida State heel turn overnight, you know, during that whole run. And I didn't have anything against Central Florida up until then, other than that when they played us in like the early 90s in Auburn, some dude's big pickup truck had Pat Dye has AIDS written on the back of window, which I always thought was remarkably specific of an insult, you know. I don't know. I mean, I guess how do you feel about it? You're glad he's got a job and he's got a place where he can be very competitive within that division. But Central Florida, how do you feel about that?
Well, there's two parts to this. How do I feel for Gus and how do I feel about the Central Florida part, right?
Yeah, okay.
So I'm happy for Gus. Again, I like Gus as a human being. I think he's a good person. I think he represented Auburn well, and it didn't work out, but I think he did the best he could, and he, you know, he loved the players and took care of them and did the right things for them and stuff. And I think, I think he's a good football coach. It just didn't work out to, you know, the level we wanted it to. Now, so I'm happy he got a good job where he can go be successful, and I'm going to be happy when he is successful. The other part of it is, like you said, like, I don't love Central Florida. I'm going to be happy for Gus when they win games, but this is not a situation where I'm going to go out and like buy some Central Florida gear.
No.
I'm more interested in watching them than I was before.
Yeah. They burned that bridge.
Sure.
They burned it. We didn't. They did. Through their attitude and their actions and their words, they proved themselves. Well,
and we're not the only college football fan base that feels that way, right? They're widely viewed as, you know, rather annoying fan base now. So
again, it feels like Florida State's fans did back in the 80s. The difference was Florida State immediately started backing it up. So you're like, well, Florida State's fans are really, really annoying, but man, they're pretty good. Whereas Central Florida is acting just like Florida State fans, but they really don't have a whole lot to back it up with.
Yeah. And Florida State fans didn't have the internet. So
that's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah. Oh, God, can you imagine what it would have been like in the 80s with Florida State fans on the internet?
Ugh, oh, the worst.
Good gosh. We're lucky that they didn't. We're lucky that Al Gore hadn't invented it yet, huh? it's just been interesting all day to kind of look on Twitter and see, you know, what Florida State people were saying and what Auburn people were saying. And like, you know, I was pointing out the thing that I said that people were kind of responding to was I said, he better not actually go fast now, or I'm going to throw a chair through a wall. He better not revert, you know, and start doing everything we've been wanting him to do for the last 7 years, 6 years, and do it now and do it successfully. And I know that people will say, well, it's, you know, football's different there in that league and that kind of team and everything. And I get that. I mean, I know that he felt like he had to slow it down and be more deliberate and play more defense and stuff in the SEC West. But still, I mean, you know, 2010, 2013, 2014 offenses were what they were. And, you know, we didn't twist his arm and force him to look for drop back passing quarterbacks, you know. So,
yeah. If they run the hurry up, no huddle the whole time, I'll be a little surprised. You heard it. He did say that he's 100% going to call plays for the rest of his career.
That was my other tweet. Was I said 2023, Gus Malzahn. Well, now that Jarrett Stidham is my offensive coordinator, I'm gonna go ahead and hand the play calling over to him. He knows what he's doing. And then 2024, now that Jarrett's gone on to the NFL to coach, I'm gonna take it back. I need to be the one to call the plays. 2025, I need to be the CEO. I'm gonna let the new offensive coordinator. It's just gonna be. See, I just feel like there's two possibilities here. Either A, we're in for a rerun of everything we've already lived through, right? We're gonna watch Central Florida for the next few years like we're watching a TV show we already watched before. It'll be like sitting down and turning on season 1 of Game of Thrones, John. And when Ned gets killed, we'll be like, yep, there goes Ned.
And spoilers.
Or the other option is that he does great, and we're like, hey, dude, why are you doing great down there? Why couldn't you do that here?
If it's a rerun, his first year, they'll go undefeated, right? I mean, they'll win 11 games or whatever.
So. Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, again, I think he's going to do well. It is a competitive league. The American is very tough, but Central Florida has a ton of talent, probably the most talent in that conference. And they have some big non-conference games on the schedule the next few years. So that part is going to be really fun. Mm. They play a lot of big-name teams the next few years. So while we're sitting here, I'm going to look that up.
John. Please do. I'm very curious now. You have piqued my curiosity. I have to know this. I heard that they don't play anybody, but...
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
Because I want to know who they play. I would love to know that. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, it's going to be like voyeurism, watching the Central Florida fans be on the Gus bus or not on the Gus bus. Oh, well, you know, and how long will it be before they're like, well, you know, he never won very many bowl games at Auburn, even though he had him in all those bowl games. Well, you know, we beat him the one time we played him. You know, it's just you don't have to be Muad'Dib from Dune to kind of be able to see the future for the next few years and know exactly where all this is going. And the alternative is that he does really, really well there consistently, at which point I'm like, then I'm going to be even madder. I don't know which one would make me madder.
I think that's a very realistic scenario. So this coming year they open with Boise State.
Oh no. The circle is now complete.
Yes. And they play Louisville and UConn, and then next year they play Louisville and Georgia Tech.
Oh, yeah, Georgia Tech, that'll be fun. Yep. Hey, so that'd be that's the George O'Leary Memorial Classic.
It is. And then down the road they play Boise State again, BYU, and then they have a series with North Carolina in a couple of years. So that'll be fun.
I specifically said I didn't want to play North Carolina. I thought I got out of that game. I thought we'd have gotten rid of North Carolina. I didn't want to play them. Well, good for UCF. Again, I don't know which would make me madder, if he does the exact same thing there or if he does great. I guess the alternative is he does. I don't think he's going to do worse, though. I mean, gosh, like you said, he's going to have all that Central Florida talent. You know, that's the place to go. So
the other interesting thing is, like, from the perspective of Central Florida, you know, they were the only job open, and they're maybe the best job in the group of five, in a great recruiting spot, you know, with a talented roster returning. They could have hired anybody. I mean, like, literally any group of five coach would have gone there, and a lot of power five coaches would have considered it. So it's, you know, I'm sure they had other really high quality candidates on the list. So it is interesting in that sense that they hired Gus.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
Well, the guy who's the AD now, I mean, remember their old AD went to Tennessee and took the coach with him. Mm-hmm. And the guy they hired to replace the athletic director was the athletic director from Arkansas State.
Yep. Well, at least he didn't come try to get Harsin from us. I wonder if it would have been interesting if Harsin hadn't taken the Auburn job, would Central Florida have tried to get him for them? I bet they would.
Probably. Yeah. Probably, yeah.
So tell me this. Did Central Florida trade up or trade down in this deal?
Well, that's the great, interesting scenario, right? Because if you're Gus is at Central Florida and Josh Heupel's at Tennessee, who got the better end of that deal, right? Tennessee or Central Florida? Josh Heupel and probation versus Gus at Central Florida is, you know, the other part of it. So it's a good question.
Yeah, we're going to see. Very interesting.
The other piece of this deal is just the Gus contract looms its head for the final time, and there is no offset clause. And what that means is, in a lot of coaching contracts, when you take another job, like if the new job pays you $1 million, then the school you're leaving has to pay you $1 million less of the buyout. There was none of that language in the Auburn contract.
Good Lord, so man.
Gus gets all his money from Auburn plus all his money from UCF. So just a reminder that the biggest loss that Auburn football took in the last 30 years was at the hands of Jimmy Sexton. You know, bigger than that, you know, Texas A&M loss at home in you know, bigger than any of the Alabama shutouts. It was that contract defeat.
We got to get better at celebrating.
Gus is just, I know Gus is probably like, I want to thank the Auburn family. I love Auburn. It was great. I love Auburn. I love my time there. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of great memories, great friends at Auburn. I love Auburn. Well, Coach, would you give back any of the money then that you got a new job? No, I'm out. I'm out. Goodbye. Click.
Well, you know what this means, though? Robo Gus can live.
Oh, Jared, alert. Woot, woot, woot. Yeah, you know, the only thing is we're not playing them. Wouldn't that be interesting if we played Central? I don't think I want to. I wouldn't want to play Central Florida anytime soon. It's too soon. Too soon, as they say.
It is too soon.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if we get them in a bowl game, I'm probably going to be sad. Well, A, sad because they're pretty good, but also sad because I don't want to have to play against Gus. I just don't want to. I want to root for him and his knights to beat up on teams I don't like. Did you see he got knighted by the knight?
I did see that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they've already got the Photoshop floating around, too. So, all right. Well, I guess we should talk a little bit about basketball, which continues to not be the happy place that I'm accustomed to it being, John. I'd like to lodge a formal complaint. I watched the Kentucky game, and it's like, you know, again, it's a two-half game in the college game, but if you broke it up into four quarters, they just had a bad third quarter, and that cost them the game because they led the – it's been that way all season. They led the first half. They had a letdown right around halftime, and then they came back strong at the end, but it just wasn't enough. So what is the issue? Why are they having that third quarter lull, kind of like Gus used to have, that's killing them?
Well, again, one of the reasons is because they're the youngest college basketball team in America.
Yep.
And so they're not going to play, you know, consistently all through the game. You know, there's going to be errant passes and mistakes on defense and times when they don't block out the right guy and that kind of stuff. And or they leave the guy open to shoot. And it leads to the other team getting a few extra plays over the course of the game. And I think the other thing is, I think, you know, other more experienced teams, you know, adapt to what Auburn is doing and how Auburn's playing and stuff. And it's hard for Auburn to adapt because they're not being told what to do by the coaches who see it coming, but because I think it's just an experience thing. And again, I want to go back to like the luck thing I brought up last week, that luck metric thing, which basically says like, based on how well Auburn has played, it's a comparison of how well Auburn's played at an absolute level versus its record is basically what it is. And in that metric, so Auburn is unlucky to the degree of that they're like the 307th team in the country in being unlucky. So their record really should be closer to 500 in the SEC if luck had evened out, basically. Not even if they were being lucky, but if the luck had kind of evened out, Auburn's record would be about 500 in the SEC. I mean, they've lost, you know, whatever, four games by 2 points and a couple games by 4 points and just one game by 5 points since Sharif came back. Right. And so, you know, some of those games, you know, Auburn should have won, honestly.
Yes.
And there were plays, you know, before the end that were, like we talked last week about that charge play and stuff, and then there have been plays at the end. This particular game, the Kentucky game, you know, was at Rupp, where Auburn has not won since John Kaler.
Jeez.
And you know, the officiating, I thought, was very slanted in that game. Sharif Cooper, you know, did not get to the foul line despite driving to the lane continually getting hacked. And so I think that was a big part of the game. And you can say, like, you know, Bruce and the coaching staff should not have called Sharif's number at the end of the game, knowing that's how the officials were calling the game. That, you know, Thor was really hot. We should have gotten him the ball. But I think Sharif has that mentality that he's the guy that finishes and he makes plays and finishes the game. But I think what we saw was against, you know, Kentucky is always a team that's going to be taller and faster and more athletic than a lot of the teams they play. And they're not great this year, but they still have those athletes they could throw at Sharif and everybody else, yeah. And it caused us a lot of problems.
Yeah, it's like this was the year if we were ever going to beat him up there. It felt like this was the time to do it. But you know, the thing that gives me hope that I keep coming back to is, you know, we're losing all these games this year, but yet you can see the potential is there. It reminds me of the year before we went to the, I guess it was the year before we went to the Final Four, where we won the year we won the SEC, but then lost really quickly in the tournament because we collapsed down the stretch, held on to tie for the regular season, losing a bunch at the end and lost in the tournament. It reminds me of that team where they just were so close to putting it all together, and they just had a couple of holes, and they just needed a little more experience, a little more chemistry. And so I feel like this team is just so close to getting it all together. If we can hang on to the at least the core of this team and add a couple more good pieces next year, I feel like the sky's the limit. I mean, everybody's been saying that. You know, all these commentators are like, this is going to be a Final Four team next year. Well, maybe not if we don't have a point guard, you know, but we'll see. But
I'm not holding my breath about Sharif coming back. I hope he does, but he's a great player. He's had a great season, and I think he's going to be in position to probably be a first-round draft pick. The danger is if Thor keeps playing like he is, he's going to be a draft pick.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's the Isaac Okoro syndrome, where the guy you yes. don't think is leaving suddenly does great and leaves. Yeah.
But, this is – in terms of problems to have, this is not one, okay? Sure, yeah. We'd love for those guys to stick around for 4 years or whatever, but – if other great players see that you can come to Auburn and get coached up, and in a year or two you're in the NBA, then they're going to come. And it's going to enable Bruce Pearl and the staff to sign more good and great players. And so, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world if Sharif and Thor both went pro and both got drafted high. Because that would be, you know, Okiki, and then last year, and these two guys, I mean, that would be, you know, 4 first-round draft picks in 3 years, that would be gigantic. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm also saying it's not a bad thing. And there is, you know, we haven't seen this team with Powell, right? Which we know would be a different planet. He would give them a different, absolutely, a completely different look. And in some ways, there is almost too many, you know, guys on this team. You know what I'm saying? Like the rotation's almost a little too big. And given the transfer rate in college basketball and stuff, I'm not going to be shocked if somebody leaves. Now, I'm not talking about even to the NBA. I'm talking about guys transferring or whatever.
Right.
So, because again, we got a guy coming in next year who's more high, you know, who plays kind of the same position as Thor and is more highly rated than Sharif Cooper is as a player. So,
I hope we don't lose JT Thor. He's really been coming on.
No, I know, and I'm not saying that we're going to. I'm just saying, like, he has shown in the, you know, over the course of the season that he is going to play in the NBA. Like, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think he's, clearly needs to – it would help him to bulk up a little bit and then be in the weight training player for a year or whatever. We saw some other players benefit from that over their time at Auburn. And so I think that's a scenario with him. But he is a – really, really fun player to watch. So
no question about it. A guy that's got those arms, those long arms, can shoot three-pointers, can play defense, can block shots.
Yep.
Yeah, he's really impressive. I'm looking at our schedule. We've got 5 more SEC games. It's not an easy road to hoe. Mississippi State at home, at LSU, Florida and Tennessee at home, and then at Alabama. So
yeah. Mississippi State's not good. Now, the important breaking news on that is that game's been moved.
Uh-oh.
Because of the ice storm, it's been moved to Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central.
Yeah, because it would have been tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it would be tomorrow night, and they can't travel right now. So
yeah, no way.
So that's, you know, Mississippi State's not very good. We got to win that one at home against a not a good team, because the rest of those teams are good.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have a tough road to hoe down the end stretch here.
Indeed. And then that'll be it. The last game we play will be the Iron Basket Bowl Tuesday, March 2nd, and that's the end of the line. Then we have to watch other teams play, which sucks. But, yep. All right. Well, there was one other thing. One of our Twitter folks, Jacob Lucas, tweeted at me a little list that he drew up, I assume, of if the basketball players were football players, a position they would play. And I want to spend a lot of time. I thought that was pretty cool. And I just wanted to get your opinion on if this is what you think that they would be, where they would be playing. So, because he's gone through, gone through and kind of listed where each of the players, and I don't even know some of these names, so, you know, help me out, where they would be playing on the field. So he's got at cornerback, he's got Jamal Johnson at corner. That makes sense in kind of a Trovon Reed sort of way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sharif Cooper is quarterback or cornerback, so kind of a Nick Marshall. That makes sense, too. Yeah, Sharif Cooper's the Nick Marshall on this team. I can get it. Javon Franklin is an outside linebacker. Chris Moore is the buck. Makes sense. JT Thor is a wide receiver, I guess in kind of like a Seth Williams, long arms, go up and get the ball kind of way. I don't know who Lior Berman is. I've never heard. You familiar with him?
I think he's a walk-on.
Okay, well, apparently he's a middle linebacker. Stretch Akinbola is a defensive end. I don't know if he's that big, but I guess he's got the frame for it.
Well, I was going to say, he's really tall, and I don't know if we want him to play offense, so I get that.
Yeah. Preston Cook is a free safety. You don't know much about him. Alan Flanagan at running back. Well, I guess you got to have a running back, and Flanagan kind of has that charge ahead, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead attitude, so... What the heck? We'll stick. He's a little tall and skinny to be a running back, but
man, I mean, he's pretty built for a basketball player.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Jalen Williams is our tight end.
I like that.
Justin Powell is strong safety. Okay. Here's another one. Chase Masdorf. That sounds like our new long snapper. I'm making him the long snapper. He's got him for slot wide receiver, but I'm making him the long snapper just for that name. I can just hear you. Now, looking for here, get ready for the kick. Chase Masdorf snaps the ball back. It is good. Devin Cambridge is at receiver, and Dylan Cardwell is a defensive tackle. I can't see. We've got like three or four players on this team that fit in that same mold we've had under Bruce. Big dudes that are like the enforcers and can rebound and can make short shots, you know. That was like Malik Dunbar, and you know, we had several like that the last few years. I think of Javon Franklin, Chris Moore, and Jalen Williams and Dylan Cardwell as all that same guy. I'm probably wrong, but that's in my mind. I imagine them all being the same guy.
And Cardwell's a much bigger guy. I mean, at Cambridge, I love a wide receiver because he's explosive. He's always doing the alley-oop. I think he can jump up and go get the ball. I like that call.
That would be cool, yeah. Yeah, he is Mr. Alley-oop. There's no doubt about that. Catching passes from Sharif. Okay, well, that was cool. Thank you, Justin. I mean, Jacob. That's from Jacob. Yeah, thank you, Jacob, for sending that in. I asked permission to read it. He said I could. Okay, so we asked about, I think it was Jared last week that asked about our favorite plays. And how did you want to handle this?
Well, I thought we'd go ahead and skip to some listener questions here because we got some really good ones, I thought. And I thought we'd kind of jump ahead and do listener questions now.
Okay.
Because we had so many good suggestions on that.
Should we go ahead and thank our listeners first?
Sure.
And then we can do, and we got a new segment that Jared recorded. So hang on for just a minute as I thank our patrons, and then we will get into that because that's a lot of fun. Jared's done a really good job with that. So for shows like this, we have to take care of our upfront costs and all that. And that's where you guys come in. John and I do the researching and the talking and the joking and the recording and the posting and all that. But you guys have to help us out. And as for as little as $1 a month, you can do that. You can be on this list that I read every episode and on the other shows like the White Rocket Show too, of the folks that keep our programs on the air. So just go to www.auwishbone.com, auwishbone.com, and click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron. It'll take you right over to the Patreon site where you can sign up to be part of the AU Wishbone family, and I will thank you just like I thank the following folks. Our current patrons include Carl Von Drucker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. Thank you, gentlemen. And then there's Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Willie Carden, Ann Canjian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth. Oh, they've got Chris and Clinton Stewart in the wrong tier. I need to tell Chris and Clinton to go in and edit the tier they're in, because their contribution is right, but they're in the wrong, they've put themselves in the wrong tier. And I don't know if I can have the ability to do that. So if you guys want to be up at the top of the list, just go in and adjust your tier setting, T-I-E-R setting, okay? There's Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer. Heard from Reynolds today. Very happy for Gus. Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE, Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, and we got a couple more. There's Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, not a minute too soon, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Owlgorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Shannon Butson, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, and then we have Auburn Elvis, thank you very much, Ben Amos, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Lawrence Kane, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Nicholas Craig, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Robert O'Sammons, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, that's the truth, Ruth, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brent Rumble, Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Be a part of the fun. We'll have March Madness pick 'em coming up very soon for all of our patrons to join in on. We've also have our Fantasy Formula One season coming around again. That starts in March very soon. A lot of fun stuff coming for our patrons in March. Just go to www.auwishbone.com and sign up, and we will see you then. John, also, just a quick update. We are completing the 3-issue Cole Lightning comic book that I wrote. It's coming into the home stretch, hopefully. We are finishing up the one-shot Pulsar comic book that I wrote with the Sentinels characters in it. Looking forward to getting that out there. And I am finishing writing a 3-issue script adapting Vegas Heist, the 2019 Pulp Factory novel of the year, into a 3-issue comic book series. And so, and I've already got a publisher kind of line on maybe on the hook for that. So we'll see. So lots of stuff coming from White Rocket Audio and paper. All right, I think we want to go ahead and hit the old...
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, so do you want to go ahead and do Jared's segment, his game segment first, and then we'll get into the
favorite
place? All right, so here's what Jared did. This is awesome. He has gone out and gotten an audio clip from an Auburn football game, and we have to figure out who the opponent is and what year.
No pressure.
No pressure. So here we go. Let me get it queued up. Oh, man, this is cool. I'm looking forward to this. This is right up my alley. Here we go.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. the Death Probe, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist, with your new segment where Van and John try to identify the game. This is our first shot at it, so we'll have to find out whether this one was too easy or too hard, and I'll adjust from there. But you're about to hear about a 45-second clip from a game, and what I'd like Van and John to do is identify who Auburn is playing and what year it is. There's definitely some clues in this one, and I remember it well. But without further ado, here is your mystery game.
Goes toward the end zone. Got a man at the 1-yard line.
Clock stops again. Another first down. 16 seconds. David Green can get him at the line of scrimmage again. Now they're substituting personnel. They're bringing in a heavy formation. Extra tight ends.
Man late getting on for Auburn.
They may spike the ball here. No, they got plenty of time to get a play call.
Ball marked ready for play. Clock starts. Green. Handoff. Amazing. I can't
believe
it.
Gotta get him lined up. Get down.
I don't believe the call. 3 seconds. 2-1. Jasper Sank stopped at the one. Time runs out.
All right, Van and John, what do you make of that? Who were we playing and what year was it? Good luck.
That was good. All right, so there were a couple of really big clues in there. There were a couple of names, and there was this overall situation. So what do you automatically just know it, or what are you thinking right now, John?
Well, I it was clearly it was against Georgia.
Yes.
Right? It was David Green and Jasper Sanks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Georgia game where they were driving at the end and didn't win. I mean, I know David Green was at Georgia in the early Mark Richt era. So I want to say, 2001 to 2004 or something like that.
Mm, okay. All right. We can use
ballparking.
We can use process of elimination on it. Now, I couldn't remember what year David Green and Jasper Sanks were there. I will say this, though. You remember you and I in Washington together watched the 92 game where Georgia was ahead, and in the last seconds, Auburn got all the way down to the Georgia goal line, and the time ran out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. This was the game where it happened to them instead of us. So that was enjoyable. I just wanted to say that up front. Now, we can use process of elimination. If it's somewhere between 1999 and 2004, and we know it's not 2005 because, obviously. Okay. 99.
And we know it's not 2004 because we kicked their rear end there.
Exactly. See, process eliminations. We know it wasn't 99 because that was Ronnie Daniels beating the hell out of them.
Yeah.
So 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. 2002 was X takeoff, Michael Jackson or whatever.
Okay.
And then my car got broken into that night, too. It was just a horrible, horrible night. 2003, Georgia beat us pretty soundly when we were struggling on offense, right? We had the Nalsminger thing.
Yep.
So it's got to be 2000 or 2001. Now, 2000 was in Auburn and was in overtime because that was the Rudy Johnson, Ben Leard game.
Yeah, the Tuberville. Yeah.
2001 was in Athens. And that was the one where Cadillac had like 50 carries as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those two. What do you think? I'm leaning toward 01, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to say 01 also.
So Cadillac had enough yards to get us ahead. And then when they were coming to try to catch us and take the lead, we stuffed them.
All right, I've got a bonus question for you. What network was that broadcasting?
Well, it was Vern, wasn't it?
I thought it was Vern. But it was Vern pre, what's his name?
Yeah, because you know what?
Gary.
That was a night game.
Yeah, see, I think Vern is maybe.
That's weird. I know it was a night game. I was at it. Well, at least the ending was at night. Maybe it was like a late afternoon and the ending was at night. But I was at that game, I'm almost 100% sure. And it was dark when that was over. I know that. Of course, I've never left a Georgia game that in Athens that it wasn't dark when it was over. I could never find my car. Usually, it takes me forever. God, that campus just—I guess the Auburn campus would be that way if you didn't know your way around it. But man, Georgia's campus just goes on forever, and all the buildings look the same. And it just—I can't ever find my car when I leave that place. When I leave that stadium, I can't ever find my car. Okay, so we're gonna go with 2001.
Yes.
All right. Here's Jared's answer file. Let me tee this up. Find out if we were right. And I'm also curious, if we get it right, I'm curious what he's going to do next time to make it harder, because you said he was going to adjust it. All right, let's see.
All right, Van and John, I am back with your answer. Hopefully you guys got that it was Auburn playing Georgia in 2001.
Yeah!
Auburn put up a heck of a goal line stand to save the game and win it 24-17.
Woo!
Again, let me know if that was too easy, too hard. We'll adjust for a future episode. I hope you guys had fun, and War Eagle.
Now he wants to know our reaction. I'll say this. I don't think it was too easy or too hard. I think that it was obvious it was Georgia. So what it really came down to is figuring out what year. So what would you tell him for next time to not have like the big player names in there? That would certainly make it a lot harder for us.
Well, I mean, would you say give us a shorter clip?
Yeah. Or just, I don't know. I mean, it's not like he's got to spend 15 hours doing this, you know. But I guess, I guess I'm just, my thought is, it was very easy to figure out it was Georgia because of the players that were mentioned.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
I would say, I think the opponent, honestly, is going to be easy to figure out if we hear names. So,
yeah.
Unless, clip without, that describes the action without names, harder to do, but I think would make the contest more challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. But it was great. That was good because we had, we got it right, but we had to kind of work at it. It wasn't easy. So very good. Very good first shot, Jared. Very, very impressive. That was cool. All right. Let's see. We've got favorite plays you want to bring out of the listener questions. So let's get to it.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. The first, we got some really good emails based on this section and this idea from Jared last week. So thanks again to Jared. The first email to auwishbone@gmail.com is from Cato the Barner.
Yep.
And he says, "Hey, John, Van, I'm going to give you an Auburn play that I can almost guarantee you no one else, is going to send in. The reason I think it's one of the biggest plays in Auburn history is not because it was super spectacular or anything. I mean, it's cool, but it's not kick six cool, but because of everything that surrounded it. I know you already know all the history, but I'm going to tell it like I tell other people who don't follow Auburn as closely and are missing the backdrop of what's happening, because to me, that's what makes this play so big. The game is 2013 Auburn versus Mississippi State. In 2012, Auburn went 3-9, and I honestly believe it's simply because Coach Chizik lost the team. We played hard and lost one close game to an 11-2 Clemson team, and the team just folded after that for the rest of the season. They had zero fight in them. My biggest concern going into 2013 was watching them do the same thing all over again. We opened the 2013 season with a close one-score win against a Wazoo team that also went 3-9 in 2012, so not exactly a confidence builder we were hoping for. Next would be a G5 team to go 2-0, but so far I'm still expecting a collapse at any moment. Then comes Game 3 against Mississippi State. We're in a 10-game SEC losing streak, pretty much a make-or-break game for the season. Sure enough, we blow an early lead, and Mississippi State spends 95% of the second half up on Auburn. In 2012, that's a backbreaker for Auburn. Mm-hmm. We would go down and just collapse on ourselves. But in this game, we saw something else happen. We went down, the team kept fighting some more, and finally, with 15 seconds left in the game, this play happened. The reason I consider this my pick for the biggest play, at least among the plays that usually get mentioned, is I 100% believe it was a turning point for that team. If we lost this game and then turned around and lost LSU the way we did next week, I don't know they would recover. I honestly think we would have kept that give-up mentality that we had the 2012 season. Maybe make a bowl game, but that's probably our limit. But watching this team continue to fight after getting punched in the mouth was huge for us, not just for the team, but for the fan base too. To me, 2013 was the game that said this isn't going to be 2012 all over again, and it was the Uzama catch that made that game. Maybe I'm wrong, but I truly believe it changed our entire season, and it almost never got mentioned again. Be honest, no one else submitted a last-second win against a mediocre, at best, Mississippi State team for their play, did they? Ha-ha, Cato the Barner. And it's CJ Uzama catch from Nick Marshall.
That was a good one. I mean, that was – an interesting thing was it was when that team was still in its Gus finding your footing, you know, who's going to be the leading rusher? Are we a passing team or a running team? Remember, we used to do that every season, the first three games or so. And that's when they were still trying to make Nick Marshall into a passing quarterback first. And he could pass. I mean, there's no doubt. He was a very good passer, but he was a, you know, I think on balance, he was like a triple option threat quarterback, slightly better than he was a passing quarterback. And it just says a lot that that game came down to us, him throwing the ball to CJ. I think if that game had been played three games from toward the end of the season, we'd have beaten them, you know, 52-3, and we would have run for 600 yards on them. But that's not who we were in like game two or three or whatever. But I totally agree with him that that really was a hugely important game. I mean, just like in 2010, we barely beat Mississippi State with Cam. Remember, it came down to Nick Fairley intercepting like a shovel pass to beat them by one score. So there have been multiple times that we barely escaped Mississippi State on the way to big things. So yeah, I totally agree. The image that always stands out in my mind from that game, because it was before we knew we were on the way to big things. Remember, it was just, you know, at the time, I mean, he makes a good point there that at the time, winning that game only felt like winning that game. You know what I mean? We weren't like, oh, if we lose this, our season's ruined. We were just like, man, I hope we can beat Mississippi State. And so they were winning. And my lasting memory of that game is they showed a little section of Mississippi State fans all cheering the whole game. And they showed him at the very end, and they were all just kind of sitting there glum, you know. They weren't cheering anymore. And that the same group of ladies, like sisters and wives and moms and all, with Mississippi State gear on, and they just looked so deflated. So, I think that was a good one, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a really good one because he really, you know, it wasn't one of the ones that everybody else is going to talk about. I really like that pick.
Yeah, and you got to have a game that's not a huge stellar kick six type game, but is every bit as, you know, I mean, you lose to Alabama that year, you still had a great season. You lose to Mississippi State, and you're like, oh, man, if we had just beaten Mississippi State, we could have been in the championship game, you know, who knows? So, yeah.
It's true. All right, our next email is from Rick Cannon, and he says, John, I'm the guy from Calgary, Alberta, that met your father at a basketball game a few years ago. We recently moved back to the U.S. to New Mexico. I'm a regular listener and appreciate y'all's insight and fandom. Here are my thoughts on signature plays. I'll try not to repeat too many of the ones he mentioned on the first podcast. So here's his list.
Mm-hmm.
The Lawyer Tillman reverse against Bama. The Ronnie Brown run against Tennessee when he trucked the defender.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. The Carlos Cheatham hit against Reggie Cobb.
Oh, yeah.
The Junior Rose Green hit against Georgia. The Smokey Hodge fourth down hit on Tim Worley. And the sack of McElroy at the end of the 2010 Iron Bowl comeback.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge play. That wasn't Fairley. That was one of our safeties, I feel like, that came through and got him and spun him around, threw him down. Fairley had a sack where he dropped the ball, and Fairley, like, crawled on his hands and knees around him and got the ball. But there was another one where one of our safeties went back there and basically grabbed him and threw him down and, like, gave him a concussion or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple of those. I don't remember the exact situation. Go back to, like, the 80s or whatever. But I do remember when we played Tennessee in 86 and 88, we beat the snot out of them both years. And when they were really good in the 80s, you know, Tennessee was one of the top three teams in the SEC a lot of that decade. And we had wars with them, you know. And I remember one game where it was probably Reggie Cobb, and they were on like third and long, and they pitched the ball to him. And I think it was Shan. I know Carlos Cheatham had a good hit on him, but I think Shan Morris went back there and like just took his legs out from under him in the backfield and put him down. So, there were some really good defensive plays against Tennessee those couple of years there, for that, no doubt about it.
All right. Our next email on this topic comes from a friend of the podcast, Ben Spooner. And he says, hey, guys, it's Ben Spooner.
Yep,
so for top individual plays, I think that you missed. I'll do two for offense, defense, and special teams.
Okay.
So for offense, he lists Rudy Johnson's coming out run against Wyoming in 2000, 70 yards of running over tacklers and dragging the rest of them to the end zone.
Yep, I remember that well.
And it really was a turning point, because remember how – small the running backs were in 99. We didn't have anybody that could really carry the ball, and he made a – we were counting on him to come in from JUCO and make a difference, and he did from the first moment.
Do you remember who also got a couple of carries in that game and was wearing number 48?
No.
Now, I say wearing 48, you immediately think Steven Davis, right?
Yeah.
Ronnie Brown.
Oh.
Ronnie Brown got a couple of carries wearing number 48, and then they redshirted him. And when he came back the next year, he was wearing 23.
Interesting. Yep. I did not know that.
Yep, because they were he and Cadillac were a year apart, but Ronnie redshirted, so they ended up being in the same class. It's true.
That's a good one. All right, so his second offensive play is Jason Campbell's 4th-and-16 throw to Courtney Taylor against LSU.
Yes.
He says, Campbell got hammered, but he found Taylor for the first down. That the game is over without it, and the 2004 season doesn't happen without it.
He got hammered, and then the rest of us got hammered. No, that's
that
true.
Was a great, it's a good call.
Yeah, that play, the fourth down play to Courtney Taylor, and then the touchdown a play or two later. I feel like on the next play after the first down, we pitched it to Cadillac, who like lost 2 yards, and then on the next play, Campbell threw it to Courtney Taylor for the touchdown. And then there's the whole adventure with the extra point, which we don't even need to go into.
All right. And then defense, he lists his first one is the chasing down of Mark Ingram in the 2010 Iron Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And punching out the fumble to roll through the end zone. The game was over if he had scored.
Yeah.
The effort of Antonio Carter saved and flipped momentum.
No doubt.
And I agree. That may be the most important, you know, defensive play in Auburn history, but individual play. Just
in some ways.
Effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
All right, and then number two, D Ford's sack of Johnny Manziel in 2013.
Oh, not only did that save the win, it was just sweet.
It was so fun.
It was so good.
I'm happy. I'm smiling just thinking about that play.
Chased him around in circles and then took him down. And it's just because he was so renowned for being able to get away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like he could get away from anybody, and there's the game on the line, and he couldn't get away from D. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah.
All right, and then there's two special teams plays. He says, these are field goals, but glorious field goals. The first one, Damon Duval's kick to beat number one Florida in 2001.
I was there.
He says, I was there between the rain and swirling wind. He had hit it perfectly in order for the wind to push it back through the uprights. He says, I stormed the field and to my everlasting regret, passed up a boost to go up on the crossbar of the post. That guy ended up getting on the front page of USA Today.
Now, I got to say, everybody gives Damon Duval credit for being such a smart technician to hit the ball just right to do that. I'm 50% that. And honestly, John, I'm 50% he just kicked it badly, and it went into that wind and blew back and made him look like a genius. Because it was like a bad golf shot that came back onto the fairway after going over a couple of holes to the right, you know? I mean, that thing was almost over the stands on the right side and curved all the way back around and went right down the middle. And I mean, on the one hand, man, that was incredibly calculated. On the other hand, wow, he sure was lucky. You know, I don't know if it was more skill or luck, but I'll take it. I'll take it either way. It doesn't really matter, does it? You know, it works either way.
No, I like to think it was calculated. All right. And then his last one is the two kicks that beat Tebow and Urban Meyer at the Swamp. Byron put it through twice to beat the hated Gators.
Oh, and he did the chomp. Yeah.
Did the chomp right at him.
Because Urban called timeout just as he was about to kick it, and he kicked it, and it came back, and then, oh, yeah, no doubt about it. That was, I think the second was even better than the first one, so, yeah.
I agree. And then he ends, he says, love the show as always. Sincerely, Ben Spooner.
Oh, well, we appreciate it, Ben, absolutely.
Good. All right, and our last one is from William Medder, who says, again, the Johnny Manziel sack at the end of the game,
yep.
The Duval kick to beat Florida, again, two that just came off Ben's list is 100%.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The 3-2 game at Mississippi State.
Oh, come
the
on.
Final whistle. The final, has the final whistle.
Get it over with. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yep.
All right. And then he says, Dyer not being down.
Oh, well, you know, the thing about that is we still had time. I feel like we were going to get down there and score regardless of that play. That's the thing, is that Oregon is so wrapped up in that one play. Well, you know, if he's down, we just run a couple more plays and kick the field goal from a couple yards further out. He wasn't going to miss.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't make a difference. And then his last one is the Duval fake field goal against LSU.
That was
the guy flips it over his shoulder.
Yeah, that was 99. We beat them, I believe, I want to say 41-7. And that was that the last time we won down there?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I never would have thought that would be I never dreamed I would be today years old, and that was the last time we won at LSU. But here we are. Mm-hmm.
Next year we get another shot, right?
I think so.
Yes, we did.
Wow. All right. Well, that was really cool. Is that all of them?
That is, and that was fun.
That was really cool. Yeah, I'm glad that Jared brought it up last week. I'm glad that folks sent it, and we came up with a few off the top of our head. And it depends on how far back you go. You can always find. Did I mention that last week that one of my complaints with the last few years with Gus is that we haven't had that many. I mean, you know, the last few years plays like that. The pass to the Stidham pass to Seth Williams to beat Texas A&M is about the only, I can't remember a big play at the end of the game that won an SEC game other than that one. We've either won fairly handily or we've gotten beaten. We just haven't looked like that Auburn team of the 80s and 90s and the 2000s that found, you know, the old Charlie, you know, as Jim Fife would say, our backs to the wall, our feet to the fire, 99 yards, you know, to the end zone to win the game at the end. You know, we haven't done much of that lately. So I'm looking forward to maybe seeing that again in the future, I hope. So we'll see.
Me too.
All right. Any other listener questions?
Nope, that's it.
Well, I think we should hop in our car here, and we got something to say about that.
A trip around the FTC.
And I say you.
So the one thing around the SEC I wanted to mention is my wife and I are fans of Outlander, and we like the actors that are on it. And they have a new show. The actor that plays Jamie and the actor that plays his like his uncle or something on there. The two of them, I don't say. Graham McTavish, maybe, and I can't think of Jamie's name. I'm blanking. But anyway, the two of them are really funny, wacky guys. And there's the show that Starz is showing. It started last night, where the two of them get in a van and they're just driving around Scotland. It's called Men in Kilts, which is kind of a play on Men in Blazers, the soccer show with the two British guys that you and I have parodied and talked about in the past a few times. In fact, we even used Men in Blazers theme music for a while, and I really missed that in a way. I just didn't want to get put in jail. But I really like that song, that la, la, la. Yeah. But they're men in kilts, and they're driving around Scotland, and in the first episode last night, they were trying different foods and everything, and they went to a couple of the distilleries and tried the Scotch whiskey and showed how they make it and everything, and it was just really funny. And I told my wife at the time, I said, you know, this is the kind of thing that I've always wanted John and me to be able to do someday, was go around the different SEC football towns and do like a show where we try the local food and we, you know, check out the local traditions and stuff and kind of have fun with it. And I wish there was some way. I mean, it's kind of what we do what we've done with our two trips to Auburn. We've kind of done that, but not all of it's, you know, the only part we've actually recorded has been when we're in the bookstore actually doing our show. So maybe in the future we can do that again and maybe go to a road trip and actually like document our trip and make a video out of it. What do you think? Is there anything to that?
I love this idea. I'm 100% in.
Oh, yes. That's what I want to hear, man. Yeah, I put it on here, men in Auburn gear. I don't know what we would actually call it. Maybe we'll call it that. We don't have a you know, we don't have a thing that we wear as Auburn people, like Alabama, be like men in elephant hats, you know.
Men in plaid.
Yeah, not houndstooth plaid. It's plaid. I'm sorry, but yeah. So that would be really cool. So I guess what we need to do then, you know, in this day and age, it's so easy to do that with iPhones and stuff. You know, you can document anything. So all we got to do is just pick out a road game that would be an interesting trip once traveling is a thing again, you know, and going to games is a thing again. And we totally will do that then. I don't know, we can do more than one a season or something, but we could do like a really cool thing with it. So, well, I'm glad that you're in on it. I was afraid you'd be like, that's stupid.
No, I'm in. Again, I want to go to more road games. I want to visit the other SEC venues, especially the ones I haven't been to. And so I'm in 100%.
What SEC venues have you never gone to?
Well, I mean, I've never been to A&M in Missouri, obviously. Okay. I've never been to Arkansas because that's just too freaking far.
Yeah.
And I've not been – I've been to the campus in Baton Rouge. I've not been to a game there.
Well, I keep thinking, I have been to Missouri, obviously, once, but I'd like to go more than that because it's just 2 hours away. I've never been to Arkansas, like you said. It's almost in Oklahoma. That's the thing about Arkansas. Yeah. It's not like the Arkansas, you know, Fayetteville is near Louisiana or near, you know, Mississippi. It's like right across the border from Oklahoma. It's a long way off. So I've never been there. I've never been to A&M. I've never actually been to the stadium in Tuscaloosa. I haven't been to an Alabama game.
I have not been to a game there either.
I've been to basketball games there.
Yeah. Early on for us, it was in Birmingham.
Yeah, I've been there many times.
And then when they switched, it was, you know.
It's too late.
It was too late. So.
Yeah, I've been to Legion Field quite a few times for a lot of stuff. But so Arkansas, A&M, Alabama.
I have not been to Kentucky or Tennessee for a game either.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I've done those. And South Carolina and Vandy. And I think about Georgia Tech, Florida State, outside the SEC, Florida State, Georgia Tech. I've been to a bunch, but there are still a few that would be cool. So, and it doesn't have to be something we haven't been to, because like I haven't been to some of them in 20 years. So I'm sure it'd be a very different experience. So, all right. Well, we'll look at the schedule and see what we can come up with. I don't think there's any way I'm going to get to go to Penn State if we play Penn State this year, but I've been circling us going to Cal for a long time. So.
All right, maybe we started there.
We'll have to look into that. I don't know. Well, we can talk about it, but that's just something you can look forward to, gang, in the days ahead. Well, and yeah.
And I would say for the listeners, if there's something specific that you would want out of that, like if Van and John go to a road game, what do you want? Do you want, like, are we going to do food reviews or beer reviews or, good, you know, the town, or and then we'll review the stadium and give our feedback on the game and that kind of stuff, of course. But what do you want to know?
Yeah, like, that's good.
What kind of, you know, features or information or stuff do you want? Do you want us engaging with the other team's fans? Do you want us, like, going and browsing their bookstore? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I like it. Now, that's good. I'm glad you thought to bring it back to our listeners, because they're the ones that are going to want to hear certain things, and they can tell us. They can kind of guide us, and of course, there'll be people that are knowledgeable about every place, and they can tell us, kind of give us hints and stuff too. So yeah, you guys give us your input. We'll look at the calendar and the schedule and everything, and we'll start thinking about where. And then once we decide on which game, which city, then we can come back and say, okay, people that are knowledgeable about this place, what do we need to do? Like, you know, like when we went to Columbia for the Missouri game in 2017. They were all telling me what pizza place, there was this pizza place we had to go to. So we went and ate lunch and ran into Will Collier and a couple other Auburn Twitter people while we were down there. And that worked out really well. So missed Delvin, dang it. That was one of those mini games where like Delvin is in town and he contacted me after we were like about to leave. So I have to remedy that in the future. But well, that sounds good. I'm glad that I'm glad you're in and we're going to do that. Any other thoughts, anything around the SEC we need to cover before we get out of here?
No, I think that's about it. But it was a fun, good, fun show, and look forward to more fun stuff like this in the off season. So
absolutely, got a basketball game on Thursday, and then another one on Saturday. They'll have a 2 days rest, so two basketball games coming up before we meet again. And I guess coming up on, what's the next thing the football team's doing? They got spring practice coming up once it
spring practice, and we'll have the draft coming up, you know, at some point in April, whatever. And but yeah, spring practice would be big.
There we go. Leading up to A-Day. All right. The 2021 season is out there, and we'll get the first hints of what to expect pretty soon. So, all right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.